apparently we are almost already half. Good afternoon. Today is Friday, November the 15th, 317th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon from the Humboldt Municipal Water District, board member.
President.
Oh, you wanted to use the title. Okay, fine. President of the board, Alderon Laird. Hey, guy.
Pretty good.
You ready to talk politics?
Sure.
And PSAs, apparently.
PSAs, yes. Yeah. we just wanted to let everybody know that next Wednesday, the Water District is going to be changing out two really old gate valves that were built when the water system was built over 50 years ago.
Oh, cool.
And this is the first time we've ever turned the water off. So
we'll talk a little bit about that, what was behind that, and what the impact might be, along with state politics.
Okay.
Water. Brand of water when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggy of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank. Our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Alderon Laird. But before we do, our quote this afternoon. Boy. Like Dean Martin. I mean, how do you not do a good one when you pull in reference Dino? Here we go. And it's almost apropos, sir.
Oh, okay.
If you drink, don't drive. Don't even putt. Oh, geez. So what's new in water? Anything exciting really pushing your buttons right now?
Oh, we're busy. We've got four projects going on at the same time.
Is this including the one that was out on the spit?
The replacement was that one. Yeah, we're doing an interconnect project with Arcata and Eureka and McKinleyville to build in sort of system redundancy for emergency ties. And that's a Prop 50 grant that we brought in.
That's got to take a long time to do that kind of stuff.
They're actually moving through it pretty quick.
Really?
I think it's going to be done this winter.
Okay.
The Techite line down on the Samoa Peninsula is the one you're thinking about.
Well, no, I was thinking all the permits.
Yeah.
Whether it's coastal or water or air or et cetera, et cetera.
Takes a long time.
The property rights, because
mm-hmm.
I don't imagine you want to build right over on top of the one that you already got there, because that would kind of seem foolish if something slipped.
Well, we have a right-of-way, so there's a little, we have some room. But we had to acquire some right-of-way for the McKinleyville intertie project.
Just a lot of those types of things.
Details.
Well, and when you look at the entire length of the project, when did that stuff start?
Oh, yeah.
This part to wrap things up.
Well, another big project we're doing is we're starting the process of building a water line crossing over the Mad River. Right now, our water line that goes to Blue Lake and Philbrook is on the old railroad bridge, and we want to have something a little more stable and have a future to it. So we may be building our own bridge, a suspension bridge across the river.
Why not just tunnel down?
That's the other option, or dig the gravel bed out and then... No, they can do horizontal tunneling, and so we don't know which way we're going to go. We're doing the investigation work right now to figure out which is the simplest and which is the most reliable way to go, and we very much are looking at tunneling under the riverbed as opposed to going over on a bridge. So we just know we're going to put a crossing in. We're not sure if it's above or below.
Oh.
and then the other thing...
Is that a pretty common thing, Alderon?
Doing crossings over rivers?
Yeah.
I think mostly they go under. I think generally they tunnel under.
It would seem that it would be the safer of the two.
Yeah, it's just I think that living in an earthquake country, if everything is underground, I think that could be a problem with maintenance, whereas it's above ground, it's easier to see if it's damaged. I don't really know. I'm not an engineer.
I'm thinking of flooding territory.
Yeah,
just
that's
all the wires that have got the big balls on them, the bridges that get blown out. the erosion that happens, all that kind of stuff.
Like, I think sometimes you can run into rock, and so the tunneling, you can start it and then run into major troubles, you know, whereas above ground, the engineers can see everything they have to address. So.
Oh, he hopes so. If they run into a rock that they don't anticipate, somebody's going to...
That's going to break the bit.
Yeah.
And then another one of our rainy collectors or our pumps, last year we did a major refurbation and expansion on one of our pumps, and now we're doing it on a second one, and it's going to increase the water yield that we can get from the underground aquifer, and the pumping will become a lot more efficient, which will save electricity, which translates into saving ratepayer dollars. So,
those things get plugged up?
They, not so much that they get plugged up as they, I think they corrode, you know, they're down 60, 80 feet under the ground, you know, always saturated. And I just think the metal of after 50, 60 years starts to corrode, or they're not as efficient, they're not as porous. And the science or the technology has gotten so much better that now we can put water lines under the bed of the river farther, and they capture a whole lot more water and take a lot less energy to pump out.
If the system was put in today,
mm-hmm.
would it be less expensive?
Oh,
astronomically more efficient?
It would be more
to current dollars.
We wouldn't build the same system. We've got five rainy collectors and a surface diversion system that was built for the pulp mill. So if we were just going to build a system for our seven municipalities, we would probably maybe put in two rainy collectors. And so it would be more efficient that way, which would be less expensive. But running pipeline in this day and age, it would be, there's no comparison to how much cheaper it was in the 50s. I mean, we're spending, you know, what I think $1 to $2 million for a mile, you know, and out on the Samoa Peninsula. That, I think, our retired superintendent, he always thought that was his biggest nightmare, is the earthquake that would destroy all the transmission lines. And everybody's worried about the pumps, but it's the pipes that are going to cost a fortune.
Starts with a P, ends with an S. You're pretty close. And these are the ones that are a little bit more flexible, so they, in theory, should have at least the same amount of lifetime.
I would hope so. The one we're replacing down on the Samoa Peninsula, the one that we're pulling out was a high-tech material at the time it was made, I guess in the 70s or 80s, but it's proved to be really brittle, and we want to get rid of it. It's one of the last segments we have, and put something in that's a lot more stable.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 3:19.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. The North Coast Repertory Theater is now celebrating its 30th season with 6 treats for Humboldt audiences. First is the George S. Kaufman Moss Hart Pulitzer Prize-winning comedy, You Can't Take It With You. Then the musical, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, based on the Peanuts comic strip. After the holidays, there'll be a double feature straight from ancient Greece, the murderous tragedy Oedipus the King and the comedy Women in Congress. Next is the side-splitting Complete Works of William Shakespeare, a parody in which all 17 of the Bard's plays are played in 97 minutes. Late Spring features the North Coast premiere of the popular Les Miserables. The season ends with The Poor of New York, a melodrama from 1857 of the problems of a middle-class family not all that different from today's. For dates, times, and details, call 442-6278. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic organization dedicated to the people and events that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:24. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with Alderon Laird. Alderon, the stuff that goes on at Sacramento regarding natural resources, if it's gravel, if it's water, if it's forest, if it's, you know, take your pick, fill in the blank, do you have a sense that these people ever get on the ground and really see what it is and talk what it is and talk to the, you know, if it's in the trees, talk to the foresters. If it's in the water, talk to the water people. If it's the gravel, talk to the extraction guys and get a sense of what's going on? Or is there more and more reliance on studies and consultants and maybe having foo-foo water instead of getting out of the building and seeing what's going on outside?
I think that I've seen over time in my career in environmental consulting that you know, we used to do an awful lot out in the field. We do a lot of field surveys, and we'd go out and measure the river and the gravel. And a lot more stuff now is just modeled, you know, and people are in their offices doing modeling. And but I do think that there is a lot of people that get out to the field to, you know, talk to the stakeholders to find out what the issues are. A lot of these initiatives don't start at the grassroots level and go up. It's more coming down from the top saying, this is a better way for you to manage your system. And unfortunately, oftentimes they come up with one solution, which everybody has to apply. And, you know, Humboldt is not Imperial County. We look at things differently. And so, you know, it's, you know, I think it, I wish we had more regional-based governance for our resources.
Is that state of Jefferson, I heard?
I was thinking of the North Coast.
I'm going to like you a whole lot more if you say yeah.
I think it used to be called Ecotopia, wasn't it, in the 70s?
Depends if you talk to a native or not. So with some of the stuff that is coming out of Sacramento right now, with the modeling, with all the science, with all the research and... Is it more practical?
Is it more pragmatic? No, I don't think so. I think that, I mean, the basic fact of the water transfer through the Delta is that we've given away more water than exists. You know, there's paper water out there, and it's just that, I mean, it just, we haven't addressed that issue after all of these decades that they essentially gave water rights to more water than exists in reality, and everybody wants their allotment. And, you know, it's just, we're dealing with the Bay Delta issues, you know, 50 years since the State Water Act was approved in 1960, and we still haven't resolved it, and we're still talking about the same stuff. How much water do we need to leave in the Delta for the fisheries, and how much water is left over that can go to the farms and the metropolitan areas? And, I mean, you would think we would have resolved that issue a long time ago.
Is a lot of it because the snowpack varies so much, or are you speaking more towards the rivers and the water that's in the tributaries?
Well, I think that we have a good handle on the snowpack and the hydrology and the precipitation, although, you know, things are getting a little more out of whack. You know, we're second dry year in a row, and if we reduce our snowpack and it's more rain and runoff, it's harder to manage and control and stuff. But I think that, you know, over the 50, 60 years, you know, the environment that we live in today isn't what it was in 1960. You could get things built in 1960 that you could never consider starting today. You know, and a lot of the water buffaloes like to refer to, you know, that what they're suffering from is a regulatory drought. There's not a drought in reality. There's not water. It's just that regulations prevent them from taking their full allotment because, you know, the court says you got to share the water with the salmon. And so... You know, we have
or
the Delta smelt or whatever else, yeah. You know, but we have more competing constituents, you know, for that water. And we don't have more water, but we have more constituents all wanting their fair share.
How much of that is being driven by development, population in areas that couldn't sustain the development without importing water?
Well, I think, you know, you need to look at how the water is used, and the lion's share of the water goes to agriculture, not urban uses. You know, and you look at Southern California, they're using the same amount of water that they did, you know, when they had 10 million less people, you know, 20 years ago. So they've become much more efficient. There's more people. They don't have more water. They're developing regional water. They don't get any more from the Central Valley. You know, and agriculture is becoming a lot more efficient. It's just that there's a lot of agricultural land, you know, and if you have water, you can put it into production. And so it's just, I think that we can't make more water. We haven't figured that out yet.
Has anybody done a statewide study to look at the water impact of marijuana, the illegal pulls out of the rivers and the creeks? And I know it's a big deal here and in the Sierra Nevadas also.
That's one of the issues that I'm bringing up to the Association of California Water Agencies. I represent the North Coast on that statewide association. And at our next conference in the spring, I want to have a forum on the water impact from marijuana grows. And I don't know that it would be in a statewide context as much as a regional context. But we would, you know, working with Department of Fish and Wildlife just on our water permits and stream permits, we've been having a tremendously hard time just getting them to the table because they are 100% consumed with illegal grows and busting all these operations. They can't do any of their other work. So it's a huge problem, and nobody's quantified it.
Well, hopefully at least it's going to, as you said, be on the table and discussed a little bit. KINS, News and Information Times, 3:30. We'll be back with more from Alderon Laird.
Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast. This is Jim Ritter with Humboldt Live in the Arcata High School Career and College Center. Do you have life and work experiences that could be of benefit to our local youth? We're recruiting community members to mentor and share ideas with our middle and high school students. Please call me at 839-5114 for more information. The Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:36. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Alderon Laird from the Humboldt Municipal Water District. Alderon, as you consider some of the political environment that we are operating in, whether it's the federal or the state, and I suppose to a certain extent to the local jurisdictions also, as you project out the next 10 years and ongoing infrastructure replacement and new challenges and things that are happening in our region, Is the district ready for it? Not financially,
mm-hmm.
but is the district ready for it?
I think so. I think that we've really invested in our employees, you know, in their training and their expertise. And I think we're a unique district in that we do much of all our own work rather than hiring consultants. We work on the dam, you know, we work on our own water lines, the electrical systems. So we have the capabilities, I think, of maintaining our system without being so dependent on having to bring everybody in all the time. Things are getting more complicated, you know, to run. And we have been putting a lot of time and effort into succession planning to make sure that, you know, we're training up the next superintendent. The
Carol's
next general
not that
manager.
Old, is she?
She's not that old, but I think she's going to retire young, you know.
No, she cannot do that.
That's what we say on the board. She can't do that. But no, you know, we're looking ahead. I think in the water industry as a whole in California, maybe nationwide, there's going to be a huge turnover of people retiring and a lack of trained, certified operators and superintendents, you know, to replace that. And we have trouble attracting people up here unless they're already here. And we have a really well-educated you know, staff and employees. And I think that we're well positioned going forward for the next 10 years.
But it sounds like the industry might not be.
I'm concerned about that. You know, I think there's a lot of poaching of people. You know, the price that people are paying for salaries constantly goes up and the benefits. And, you know, given that we're more remote, we don't see as much movement around. But down in more urban areas, I think people are moving around all the time. I don't think they stay in one place all that long, you know, and we're really blessed with, you know, we have people that start and retire in these positions and train the people below them so that we have, I think we have a good institutional memory that's being perpetuated.
So as you consider the next projects after the infrastructure is done, is it the dam that looks, is the next one? Is it mm-hmm. something else that's, what do you see out there?
You know, once we get all the infrastructure repairs done with all the equipment, like the pumps and the rainy collectors and, you know, the filtering system and things like that, I think the big thing is going to be the water transmission lines. You know, they were laid more than 50 years ago, and we're looking at all the moving parts. You know, we're trying to get those up to date and replaced, you know, but at some point in the future, just like we're doing on the Samoa segment, you know, we're going to have to probably start replacing segments. And laying pipe is just really an expensive adventure. I mean, I wonder if we could afford to build our own municipal system in this day and age with our own money generated from local bonds, or we would be totally dependent on federal and state assistance, or we wouldn't be able to do it.
Well, there seems to be a template that reflects that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's issuing from the state or you know, drafting on this or drafting on that. So I wouldn't imagine that there are too many anymore to do that.
No, I think that we were pretty unique in, you know, we own our dam system. We own our distribution system. You know, we have control of the whole thing. And we did it all with local dollars. And I think that's pretty unheard of.
Is there any movement, kind of in the range of the dollars and cents, is there any movement at all with trying to find either users for the water or, I guess, more intriguing to me is economic development to attract people here to use the water?
That's one of our main pushes in our water resource planning is we need new revenue. That's what we need, you know, to not only to maintain the system, but to lower people's water rates. And so we have an excess of water rights, and what we want to do is find new customers to use those. And we're really hoping that, you know, the fact that we have the water is an incentive to bring new businesses to the areas along with the other people that are involved with economic development, like the Harbor District with their aquaculture center that they want to get going. You know, I really think that that's the best way for us to resolve our dilemma of having too much water rights is by increasing our use and our revenue. I think that anything we do has to generate more revenue or this system, you know, may not be sustainable 50 years from now if we don't maintain the revenue base.
Because the population certainly isn't going to grow into that number.
Well, it's not going to, and we're, you know, at some point we're going to have that big infrastructure replacement, which is the transmission lines, you know, and I think that that's going to, unless we have a lot of largesse at the state and federal level to bring the money to us, you know, I think that we could be in some hurt for that.
Oh, they have the largesse. It's just we don't in our pockets.
Right. Yes, they have it.
How much of a system, how much is the transmission line? What does that account for versus the stuff that you guys are doing?
You mean dollar-wise?
Yeah, is it like 50, 60, 70, 80% of what a total system is? Is that kind of stuff? Or the pumps more?
I would say, you know, don't hold me to the numbers. I'm just the president. I'm not the engineer or the general manager.
I think the phrase is, I'm just the president. I don't know what's going on.
Right. That's right. Okay. Now, I would say probably 50 or 60% of the cost might be in the transmission system.
So even if everything else is humming along, that's still
a big
chunk.
You know, and then Arcata and Eureka, you know, they're a lot older than 50 years, you know, so their systems are older. You know, when the new areas out to Fieldbrook or Blue Lake or Manila, the systems aren't as old, you know, but the transmission or the distribution system, I think, is a big expense.
Yeah, something about Terracotta and Redwood.
Yeah.
Just don't quite make it anymore.
We've come a long ways
pipes.
From that.
Yeah. KINS, well, some areas of Eureka and Arcata have. KINS, News and Information Times 342. We'll be back with more from Alderon Laird.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times 346, final segment of the week. This afternoon, we're spending it with Alderon Laird. Alderon, looking at some of the different things that are going on, you guys have projects, there are progressions that are going on. You can see some of it if you're paying attention to it, but also then every once in a while there's an opportunity for the entire community to participate in one of those moments.
We have that moment right now. Next Wednesday, we're going to turn the water off to replace a couple of valves that have been in place for over 50 years, and we filled up all the water tanks in Eureka and Arcata and McKinleyville and Fieldbrook and everywhere, so everybody's topped off. But we're just asking the community that next Wednesday, just try to use a little less water so that the water tanks that are topped off will, you know, make it through the day. It's only going to take us 14 to 16 hours to replace the valves, and then we'll turn the water back on. This is the first time we've ever turned the water off. And so
you said us.
Well, I'm not doing anything, obviously. I'm doing the public service announcement.
Oh, I see.
That's
you're
the important part.
Mouthpiece, okay.
Yeah, I'm the mouthpiece. No, the people that really know what they're doing are doing the work.
What do they expect? I mean, if it's never been done in this system, I would think there's got to be a a lot of sediment in there. I mean, even if it's a clean system, there's going to be sediment. And how do you, you know, 50 years ago, replacing something like that, making sure it's not leaking or shoot a fountain up when everything's all done. I mean, all that kind of stuff, I would think, is almost got to be an art.
They've got it well planned. I mean, they've trained and done practice runs. I mean, they have everything opened up. They have all the brand new valves. These valves are over a ton in weight, you know, moving them. They're doing one first, and then they'll do the second.
Good move.
You know, we want to make sure everything goes smoothly, and I'm pretty confident that it'll go smoothly. I mean, it's just the size of the valve is different, but changing valves and patching into pipelines is something our folks do all the time.
Just like regular plumbing?
It's like regular plumbing on a gargantuan scale.
Yeah, a little bigger solder.
a welding job and whatnot. But yeah, they have everything in place, and we don't expect any problems, and it looks like the weather's going to be okay. But West End Road will be shut down over by our operations at Essex, so people will have to go around. And we've sent out notices to all the adjoining property owners on West End Road so they wouldn't be inconvenienced. And all of our cities are doing everything they can to make sure they have their water systems full. Arcata has a little bit of trouble with capacity because they have to pump water up to the hills, and they have small tanks. They have many tanks. And so, but we have a couple of million gallons of water stored in tanks in reserve. Just to, if there's any fire, we have 1 million gallons of water just for the fire departments. We have water for Arcata, and then we have even more backup water. So we're not anticipating any problems, and I think it'll be an interesting thing to get done.
I would think it's going to be really tough for you not to be right in the middle of it. I mean, just anybody who's on the board that spent any time. I want to see how deep the hole is. Yes. I want to see what's going on. This is cool stuff. This
you
is
would
it.
Think that you know, being the president, that you know, I'd be able to get out there a front row seat. But no, we're supposed to stay away and let the professionals do their work. And if they need us, they'll call us.
Yeah, right. No chance.
No chance. They don't need us at all.
I got to be hanging around. At least, you know, applaud. There's going to be somebody there clapping when they do the job or moving the stuff. And just, I mean, you know, like you said, it's a once-a-lifetime opportunity.
Well, I told Carol, our general manager, that Dale, our superintendent, he ought to sign the gate valves and say hi to the future superintendent who 50 years from now is going to dig it up and go to replace it.
Oh, yeah, put a little something down there with it.
Yeah, a little note from the past. So, yeah. Yeah, and I think it'll go well.
A letter of recommendation. Oops.
Oops.
Well, cool. So that's happening Wednesday, pretty much all day Wednesday.
All day, just 14 to 16 hours on Wednesday. And we don't do oops in our business. We don't have oops.
We'll find out. Thanks for coming by.
You're welcome.
We've been talking shop this afternoon with Alderon Laird. Join us Monday afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out, make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.